Recorded live from the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Pelias Pecans.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast, your ticket to the latest, most accurate Ole Miss football recruiting information. No spin, no false hopes, just facts from the recruiting trail from RebelGrove.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Caution, you are about to enter the no spin zone.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
God, here we go again.
Welcome into another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, Russell Johnson joins momentarily. We'll take your questions from RebelGrove.com, and you'll hear Russell's interview with Nick Kruger of Rivals.com. Taped that just a little minute ago, about 26, 27 minutes or so. A lot of recruiting from the camp circuit, so we'll get you caught up on that as well. First, let us tell you about Billy's Pecans. Excuse my voice. It's trying to escape today. Billy's Pecans. It's B-I-L-L-I-E-S, pecans.com. It is a great place for all of your corporate gift needs. Billy's Pecans knows the perfect crunch for every palate, whether it's a gift for a corporate client, presents for the staff, tokens of goodwill for a referral. From 5 to 5,000 orders, they'll handle it with expertise and excellence, all with their signature Southern style and with items at every price point. You simply can't choose wrong. Try the assorted gift bags at 8 ounces each. They make perfect thank you gifts. The best-selling party trio, any three pecan treats, or perhaps the pecans and chocolate if you have a sweet tooth or if the person you are sending to does. Additionally, Billy's Pecans can customize your packaging with your company or organization's logo affixed as a sticker to their round boxes so your brand is front of mind. Their decadent flavors are there to back it up. Homemade treats, easy ordering, professionally packaged, shipped fresh and direct. It's the process of doing business with Billy's Pecans, and it couldn't be more satisfying. Again, billyspecans.com or 1-800-624-7404. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. No haggling. It's just an easy car buying experience. We'll make it even better. Tell Corey at the end of your deal, hey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention any of our podcasts, including this one. And it's $500 off the bottom line from your deal at Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900. All right, Russell, I think what we're going to do is let's go first to your interview with Nick Kruger. Then we'll come back from that, and we'll get into questions from the people at Rebel Grove. Is that good with you?
That works good with me.
All right, then that's what we'll do. Russell talked to Rivals.com's Nick Kruger earlier this morning as we're taping this on Wednesday morning. It's about 26, 27 minutes or so, like I said, of just Russell and Nick talking college football recruiting. I think you'll enjoy it. Take a listen.
We've got Nick Kruger from Rivals.com here on the Billy Pecans hotline. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, doing good. It felt a little bit like summer here yesterday, but now we're back in the spring with the rain, and I don't know how it is out there in Texas.
Well, it was real nice. I'm looking out the window right now. It looks like we've got typhoon conditions coming this way. So if you hear thunder and lightning in the background, that's the story there.
All right, all right. Now, you've obviously had two back-to-back pretty busy weekends with the Rivals camps in Houston and in Dallas. What were your main takeaways from those?
Well, every time we do these camps, every spring, it's always a really good opportunity to, take a look at guys that, especially guys that we've just been hearing about, more so than guys that we've actually had the chance to see in a lot of cases. And, you know, the thing that we haven't really talked about a lot, but I think it's kind of been a byproduct of this early signing period is, you know, everything with our timeline as far as player evaluations has gotten pushed back a little bit because now, you know, you have to get everything, especially for me in Texas, you have the state championships running right up into Christmas, and then you have the early signing period in the week before that. And then, you know, you come back from Christmas, you have to get ready for regular signing day. So all this opportunity that you would have otherwise had to take a look at young guys coming up or other guys that you might have wanted to take a second look at, you don't really have that opportunity. So now the camps this spring, especially for me, this is the first time that we had two camps in Texas now for the past couple of years. It was a good opportunity for me to get a lot of guys into one place and kind of play catch up with myself, which was important.
Yeah. Now, before we kind of get to, you know, some recruiting questions and everything, there's been some national storylines going on in recruiting. You know, like you were talking with the recruiting calendar getting pushed up. It seems like there's been a lack of verbal commitments, especially, you know, in the area in Texas recently. Do you think that's because of the early signing period, or do you think that's just the way everything's go right now?
Well, I think right now we're kind of in a lull because there are a lot of kids that are interested in taking official visits here in the spring. And, you know, we've seen a couple kids release top eights, top tens, things like that. But, you know, we haven't seen a lot of kids committing necessarily because I think they have an opportunity now to take official visits here in the next couple of weeks or months. And they're just kind of waiting to knock a few of those out before they make any big decisions.
That makes sense. Now, Ohio State and Texas, they were beefing a little bit over the weekend. Was that about Garrett Wilson?
I didn't see that. I actually have been trying to like sleep as much as I can, but maybe you can give me a little background.
I think it's the recruiting coordinator for Texas, is Brian Whittington.
You're right, Carrington. Yeah,
no, yeah, Carrington, and then the assistant receiver coach at Ohio State were going back and forth, and he was like talking how he wanted to be at Texas and not so loyal to Ohio State hashtag, and it was a little it got a little intense. It looked like it got personal, but because I know the receiver from Lake Travis, he's originally from the Columbus area, so kind of everybody expects him to end up at Ohio State, but obviously Texas is kind of pushing the you're here now thing, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if the root of that was the was necessarily tied directly to Garrett, but you know, the other thing too is, Tim Beck, you know, came from Ohio State. There's a lot of Ohio State ties in the Texas program right now. Obviously, Tom Herman spent some time there too, and Tim Beck, the offensive coordinator, has been in there. So, there's been some movement there. And you know, if I recall correctly, I think they, you know, Brian Carrington himself was in a situation where, you know, after he helped pull together, you know, this phenomenal 2018 class, you know, his demand was obviously pretty high, and they had to make some moves to make sure that he stayed at Texas too, and kind of gave him some added responsibility. But, maybe there is a little bit of beef there. I don't know. I haven't taken a look. I don't see if they're on the schedule anytime in the near future, but maybe that would be something they should start looking into at this rate.
Yeah. Especially like you said, with all the connections with Beck and Herman and all of that. Mm-hmm. Now, Bishop Dunn, they've kind of made some waves with Marquez Beeson committing to Illinois. Is that more of a Kansas 2.0 situation with last year and Devontae Jason, or do you think that's something that is going to, you know, kind of become a movement?
You know, the Illinois program has been recruiting the Dallas area especially very aggressively, and they seem to have gotten their hooks into the Dunn program a little bit. And it seems a little bit more intense there because there are so many Division I level prospects at that program. So their overall level of success in the Dallas area may not be quite as extreme as it seems. And certainly Marquez Beeson is a very social person, a very personable dude that, you know, has made friends with a lot of players in the state of Texas. And, and he's obviously going to be a mouthpiece for them when they, when they want to nudge a couple of guys here and there to take a harder look at the program. I mean, Illinois is, I can't remember the name of the other, the top guy that they got fairly recently as well. But I think, you know,
the quarterback from St. Louis, was it Isaiah Williams?
Isaiah Williams, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, so I know Andrew Hayes Stoker is the wide receivers coach, and he's from that area, and, you know, really plays into the local connection when he recruits guys from the Dallas area especially. A lot of guys are impressed with, you know, what they've heard about and from Lovie Smith, despite the win totals. I mean, they've done a good job selling the fact that the program is obviously in kind of a little bit of a state of turnover. And, I suppose Lovie's pressing saying the right things to give kids the impression that he's going to be sticking around for a while. And that's important. You know, I think I think with Marquez Beeson specifically, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a situation like Devonta Jason so much, because in 2018, Keevan Myers and Calvin Avery from Bishop Dunn both committed to Illinois too, so or signed with Illinois rather. So they're of course going to be, you know, doing their part to make sure that Beeson stays committed to the program. And is Marquez is the type of guy, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see him switch to a Texas A&M or switch to, you know, an LSU or something down the road, some of these other schools that he had in his top four before he made his commitment. If he doesn't, if the traction for Illinois recruiting doesn't continue, you know, at the pace that it seems to be right now, I mean, if it kind of stagnates and, you know, they just fill their class with a bunch of low-ranked three stars and two stars, as you know, as some people might expect, you know, that Marquez might look around and say, well, maybe this didn't turn out quite as well as I thought it would, and then he might, you know, he might jump ship because, but that's not for me to say. I mean, I can't say that confidently. He might be, you know, he might very well be all in on the Illinois transformation, and I know he thinks he's a big star and he wants to be the focal point of something like that, you know, should things get turned around out there.
Yeah. Now, kind of shift into some Ole Miss questions and some topics. You saw Maverick, is it McIver? Is that how you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, well we've been making, there were a lot of jokes, MacGyver jokes about him, you know, manufacturing keys out of coat hangers and you know, loose string and things like that to get out of bad situations. But I think it's more McIver and less MacGyver. So
did you get a chance to see him throw it all?
Yeah, he looked good. He looked fine. You know, that was the first time that I got a chance to see him. He plays a little bit more of a remote location, you know, with his high school team than I'm used to going to during the fall. And you know, kind of keeps a low profile and has a handful of you know, sort of, you know, mid caliber offers, I suppose you could say. So, you know, he looked good. I mean, a lot of quarterbacks this past weekend, I thought looked pretty good. Especially in the one-on-one segment at the end, they had the wind to their back. You know, it was an easy day to throw. And obviously the receivers for the past 2 weeks, you know, at each one of these camps have been top notch. So they were, you know, they were doing their part to help the quarterbacks look that much better. So, you know, he's a guy that, you know, when you look into the camps and the performances of the guys throwing the ball, a lot of them, you know, do fine throwing the ball deep to guys like Trajan Bridges and, you know, like you mentioned, Garrett Wilson and guys like that. You know, they'll go up and get it. You know, what we were kind of looking for is to see how those, you know, how those tough passes to the sidelines look, the back shoulder throws. McIver did a good job of, as anybody, you know, putting a little bit of juice on his passes and making those tight throws, and, you know, I thought represented himself pretty well.
And Tisdale, did he live up to the hype? Obviously, you know, he's rated a four-star. He's been in and out of the 250 since we did our first 2019 rankings. Do you see him possibly ended up back in the 250, or do you kind of see him, you know, staying out there still as a four-star?
Well, he's definitely gonna. I think he's definitely gonna stay a four-star. There's no question about that. I mean, and I think in his situation, you know, we have Grant Gunnell as the top-rated quarterback in the state, and there's a big enough gap between him and Tisdale that I think that's how it's gonna stay. But I do think, you know, I do think that there's room for Tisdale to move into that, you know, into that second slot of quarterbacks in the state. Definitely a guy that I think has, you know, ability to be. You know, a marquee quarterback in somebody's class. You know, the thing with Tisdale, and when you watch him play in games, it's sort of the same situation. I mean, he doesn't really strike you as somebody that plays with a lot of urgency. He doesn't you know, he doesn't put as much zip on his passes as some other quarterbacks might. But he's a patient quarterback. He's a measured quarterback. He's a smart player, you know, so I think he kind of compensates for some of the, you know, some of the arm talent questions that some, you know, with some other aspects of his game. And I think that's what's going to continue to make him a top-notch quarterback prospect relative to others in this class. You know, he doesn't, you know, I would be happy if I was a fan of a team and he was the quarterback that we took.
Is he a legit 6'1"?
I'm sorry?
Is his height legit? He's listed at 6'1", so I was just curious if that's what he measured in
at.
Oh,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, well, the easiest thing for me to do is to figure out how guys look when they're standing next to me, and he's in that range. I'm about a solid 6 feet, so he's not shorter than that for sure.
And with him, it seems like he's got Ohio State, Baylor. He said Texas Tech was pushing. Do you mm-hmm. see him staying in state, or do you see him kind of spreading his wings and getting out of the Lone Star State?
Well, the thing to remember, I guess, by comparison is, you know, Ohio State they're proactive about finding young athletic quarterbacks in Texas, it seems. I mean, they offered Jalen Maiden pretty early on in the process as well. And I think, you know, they dropped that offer off and let them, you know, kind of see how things continue to go with them. And, you know, I think in Grant's case, you know, like I said, I've got no problem with his talent. I think he's a fine quarterback. I don't think that, you know, I don't get the impression that Ohio State feels as though he's, you know, he's developed, you know, probably physically as much as they would have hoped or expected, or have seen maybe as much of a dynamic sampling of plays of him running the ball as maybe they thought when, you know, when they offered him at first. So I think the Ohio State train has kind of cooled a little bit in regards to him.
So basically he's not a take there.
I'm sorry?
He's not a take there, you're saying? Like, he doesn't have a committable offer?
I'm not willing to say that. I mean, he did say that Ohio State has stayed in communication with him. I'm just saying relative to, you know, other schools that have been involved in his recruitment as of late, I think there's probably more enthusiasm from a school like Baylor or Texas Tech to try and get him involved in the class more so than in Ohio State.
What kind of offense do you see him fitting in at best at the next level?
I mean, you know, a lot of people are going to look at him and think that he's a dual threat quarterback. I really think he's closer to a pro style quarterback at this point than anything else. I mean, watching him play games in Allen, you know, they try to run a lot of run pass options. I don't think he necessarily has the sort of explosion and you know, assertiveness to, you know, to really tuck the ball and run at the, you know, at the sort of speed that's needed to, you know, to be that sort of quarterback. So I think somebody that's going to be able to find and that's not to say that he can't run and pass on the move, but I just don't think that should be the focal point of the offense when it comes to him. So I think he needs to find something that works for him, that, you know, he can sit back there, survey a defense and, you know, and deliver passes. And I think that's sort of going to be what ends up working for him ultimately.
Now you were talking about Baylor. How has the coaching staff there been able to, you know, kind of put the pieces together since getting there last year? I know obviously it was reported that that Matt, the head coach, had interviewed for the Colts opening. I was just curious as to how they're able to recruit with everything going on from the off-the-field standpoint.
Well, what's going to be really interesting to see over the next couple of years, or I guess really just the next season or two, is just, you know, is just how much they can continue to capitalize on the goodwill that they've really established with the staff. You know, if the wins don't start to materialize, but the smartest thing that Matt Rhule did and is continuing to pay dividends this season is getting Fran Brown and Joey McGuire on his staff to recruit kids, because that connection with high school programs, you know, in the Dallas area and beyond, you know, is really done. You know, has really done its job in making sure that kids pay attention to Baylor, even if the wins aren't there. Joey McGuire is such a magnetic personality and has kids sold on the family culture there, and that's something that, you know, every recruit says: does it feel like home? Does it feel like family? Well, I think in Baylor's case especially, they've done a really good job of making that be the feeling that kids get when they go on recruiting trips there now. You know, the thing with Matt Rhule applying for interviewing with the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, they did a really quick job to kind of brush that under the rug, address that with all their all the kids that eventually ended up signing there. Every kid that I talked to in regards to that story, you know, gave me the response that, you know, it was not a very serious thing. They did a really good job of. You know, of making sure that didn't get blown further out of proportion than it did. You know, so again, it's like I said, I mean, they've done a great job establishing a culture with, you know, of closeness with the staff, the players there. But at some point, you know, wins are going to ultimately have to, you know, to be a part of the equation there, because you can only get kids to buy in for so long before they realize, like, hey, listen, it might be fine to hang out there, but, you know, if we're not playing for conference championships, if we're not winning, if we're not playing for bowl games, you know, that's going to be something that's going to become a pretty big roadblock in their recruiting process.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely something that kind of I was thinking too. Now, everybody's favorite recruit in the state of Texas, at least around here, has been Bobby Wolf. He was Ole Miss's first 2019 commit. He decommitted when the Freeze departed, and then he committed to A&M earlier this I don't know if you call it winter or spring, but and then he recently reopened things as well. Do you see him kind of waiting a while now before making his third commitment, or do you think he might be close to pulling the trigger somewhere?
Well, you know, he re-released a top 10, as you know. Actually, you yep. Sent me off to the top 10 before he did. So,
yeah.
you know what the story is with him. I just think in Bobby's case, you know, I mean, listen, his everything about his Twitter handle, he lives the gimmick of, you know, Hollywood, lights, camera, action. Like, he loves attention. He loves the spotlight. He's one of my favorite guys to talk to, honestly, in this class. I mean, he's a really good-natured kid. Really likes to have a good time. When he was out there. And committed to Texas A&M. That was the same time that Rivals 250 wide receiver Cam Brown also committed. They, you know, the Aggies did a really good job on that. I think it was some kind of junior day.
Yeah, I think it was too.
They had it. You know, they did a really good job of getting kids cornered, trying to get them into the class. Almost came close with a couple of other guys, it seemed like. But, you know, I just think Bobby's a guy that really just likes the recruiting process. I think he really likes, you know, like I said, the attention, likes the spotlight. And, you know, and it's easy, you know, we see a lot of these kids get swept away on a junior day experience and, you know, and get caught up in everything that they're seeing, everything that they're being told. And, you know, and then they pull the trigger only, you know, for a couple months later, you know, sit back and realize, hey, wait a second, maybe I was a little too quick to go on that. So, you know, I think that's really all that just happened with Bobby. And in addition to the fact that I think he's, you know, he still likes you know, the calls and the edits and the people inviting.
Yeah, he loves the edits.
And things like that.
That man loves the edits. How did he look at the Rivals camp last week?
I'm sorry.
How did he look in Dallas last week?
He did a good job. I mean, it was really surprising that he came out there at all. I mean, he told me he was going to be out to the Houston camp. Said that he had some car trouble and he wanted to come to Dallas. And I was like, man, if you have so much car trouble, you can't make it to a camp in your own town. How are you supposed to make it to Dallas? And lo and behold, there he was. And he did a pretty good job. I mean, there's one clip that we showed where Khatib Lyles is a running back wide receiver out of El Paso, kind of broke his ankles on a play.
You talking about when he fell?
A little quick out or whatever. But I mean, other than that, I mean, I thought he did a really good job. The kid's got a great frame for a cornerback. You know, broad shoulders, long arms, does a really good job working back to the ball when it's in the air. You know, we saw him have a real nice interception in one-on-ones too that didn't quite get the internet play that Khatib Lyles play did.
So, right.
You know, he's somebody I'm not worried about, somebody that I think is continuing to improve. You know, somebody that I still think, you know, relies a lot on his physical abilities, and I don't know if he gets the level of coaching at Houston Madison that, you know, that he might get elsewhere, you know, to really take that next step forward. But I think, you know, I think all the tools are there, all the physical elements are there, that he's going to continue to move forward and be a top prospect.
Now, last real question. It's probably going to be a pretty lengthy one. You know, 7-on-7 football has kind of taken over this part of the off season. I talked to Rob Cassidy a couple weeks ago, and we were both talking about, you know, how it's really taken over in like this Mississippi, obviously where I'm at, and then Florida, and really in the Southeast in general. But in Texas, it was just kind of starting to get going. Do you see that becoming a problem in the state of Texas, or do you think it's going to be good for the athletes to get more exposure and everything?
Well, you know, I've only been here for a couple of years myself, so I don't have the lengthy perspective that maybe some other people do here in the state. But, you know, just from my experience being out here, in, you know, in the past, I guess I was out here for 2.5 years, starting with the spring prior to the 2017 class. But I can tell you, I mean, just in that period of time, every spring it's a different story, and I don't know what I'm going to get from 7-on-17 until it happens, because, you know, guys decide they don't want to play, then one of their friends joins the team, and they try to recruit the other guys to come and play for that team, and every year it's a different team as to which team all the guys, you know, end up gravitating to. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes as to, you know, where these teams are tied into and what the ultimate benefit can be from guys playing on these 7-on-7 teams. And, you know, it's really just, for lack of a better term, it's gotten pretty political. It's gotten pretty, you know,
that's a nice way to put it.
In some cases. So it's really been interesting to watch. I mean, I don't really get a chance to dig into the 7-on-7 stuff anymore since we have these camps. You know, I don't go to just the Texas camps. You know, all of the Rivals analysts go to camps outside of the region. I was in San Francisco and Mobile. We were out there at the same time. So a lot of the tournaments and stuff go on while I'm elsewhere helping out with the Rivals camp. So it's not really something that I have to get overly concerned about. Something I'll probably see a little bit more in the summer. But the thing that Texas does as well is they have the state 7-on-7 tournament where kids, you know, just team up with, you know, it's a high school event essentially. So if nothing else, I get to see that, and that's a little bit that's isolated from all the other stuff that we were talking about with the private club teams as well. So the 7-on-7 thing is interesting, and for guys that go out to the national tournaments in Los Angeles and Las Vegas and at IMG and all that stuff. But I think it's fun for them to go out there and have that experience, but you've been to them. I mean, you know, you tell me what you take out of them. It's a showcase for the skill players. Just one more chance to get a look at them. And then you just kind of measure it as best you can with all the other stuff, you know, about them. Nothing too severe, you know?
Right. Yeah. You don't make any rash judgment. You know, you're not adding or subtracting stars based on how someone does in a 7-on-7 tournament. I use it more as a ability to, talk to some kids that I may not get to talk to. Like, I went to a 7-on-7 tournament in Nashville a few weeks ago, and Cam Newton's team was there, and I'm not in Atlanta all that much, so it was nice to be able to talk to a couple of them. If I remember correctly, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna say it's just another, you know, going back to what I said initially about our camps in Texas. Like I said, you know, sometimes you just hear about a guy, like you were asking about Grant Tisdale. Is he really 6'1"? You hear about a guy, is he really 6'5", 6'6"? You see him out there playing, running around 7-on-7. Whoa, this guy does have that legit size, you know. So, if nothing else, it gives you a chance to kind of get a little bit more perspective on some of that other stuff too, because it can very easily swing the other way, you know. Much shorter or slower or what have you. So
my favorite is the 5'10" kid who's like 5'6".
Oh man, yeah. Well, and the other thing too is the other thing that's horrible about 7-on-7 stuff is, you know, that 5'6" kid can come out there and kill it, and then you never hear the end of it from this coach or this parent or whatever, you know. So
yeah,
because that's the sort of thing that those events are made for, is for kids like that to really come out and shine. So, you know, it's like everything else. You try and take it with a grain of salt, measure it out the best you can. But I like 7-on-7 stuff. You know, kids are usually a little looser, easier to talk to, and so you just as long as it's in a nice location and you can, you know, get a little personal time for yourself to enjoy some other stuff beyond the tournament, that's really the major value for me.
Yeah, right. Now, real quick, do you see anybody in the state of Texas kind of having the recruitment that Tommy Bush did last season? Obviously, I think it was around this time he started picking up offers. I think Michigan State was the first Power 5 offer, and then it was just on from there.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this, when you bring up Tommy Bush, it made it difficult for me to try and think about anybody other than a wide receiver. But I think we already had that, really, in a wide receiver, in Elijah Higgins. I mean, he's a guy that came out at the Army Combine with just, you know, I think maybe three or four offers, played in Austin Bowie. You know, it's like I said before, all these kids in the Austin area don't necessarily get recruited on the level of some of the other big metro areas. And he came out after that Army Combine, put on a show. And ever since then, it's 7-on-7 tournaments, it camps, anything like that. I mean, he's just a catch machine. He's a big physical dude. I mean, a lot of people are thinking, you know, will he grow into a tight end? You know, he doesn't necessarily separate on the level that a lot of elite receivers do, but he just finds ways to make catches. And now his offer list is already up. It's up over 25, might be closer to 30 or more. And that's exactly the sort of trajectory that Tommy Bush had. I mean, people caught one look at his frame, heard about his speed, and after that, I mean, it was all on from there. I mean, Tommy, you know, when you watched him play at in games or in the Army All-American Under Armour All-America game, I mean, you know, there were some deficiencies to his game. I mean, he's going to need some polishing up as a complete receiver to take full advantage of all those physical tools that he has. You know, I think Elijah may be a little bit further ahead than Tommy was at this point, honestly, as far as that stuff is concerned. But I mean, yeah, as far as an offer sheet is blowing up in the same way that Tommy's did. I mean, Elijah definitely fits that mold. In the 2020 class, a guy that I just posted a story about coming out of the Houston camp, also from the north of the Austin area, is Colin Sullivan. I mean, just wait, he's a 2020 kid, but just wait till this time next year. I mean, he's gonna be a guy that's gonna have close to 30 offers as well. He was just fantastic at our camp, and he's really starting to develop physically. Those are two guys that I'm just really excited about.
Well, Nick, I really appreciate your time today. I hope you enjoy a little bit of time off, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, man. Thank you.
Our thanks to Nick Kruger for his time here on the podcast, a podcast that is brought to you by Fidelity Mortgage agent John Benelli. John's been in the mortgage business for 13 years. He has extensive experience in conventional loans, FHA loans, USDA rural development loans, VA loans, and bond loans. John specializes in home mortgages and loan services in the Jackson-Flowood area, but he services the entire state of Mississippi from the coast all the way up to vacation homes on the coast, condos in Oxford, all points in between. You can contact John at fidelitymort.com or at 601-842-9764. Fidelity Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 1039190. Today's show is also brought to you by the Storage Acquisition Group. The Storage Acquisition Group is an industry-leading expert at identifying and acquiring strategically located storage facilities throughout North America and beyond. As the preferred buyer for one of the largest private owners of self-storage in the world, Director Monty Spencer and his team have upended the acquisitions market by giving facility owners a new avenue to divest. How exactly can self-storage facility owners benefit? It's simple. The group buys direct and charges no commission or fees. Their free, no-obligation evaluation even means that you can get a comprehensive picture of your property's value without the need to commit. If you're thinking, yeah, but I don't own a self-storage facility, I was just enjoying the podcast, well, listen to this. Even if you're not an owner, you can benefit too. The Storage Acquisition Group's buyer has a generous referral program in place for referrals that lead to a closed transaction. So visit www.thestorageacquisitiongroup.com to find out more. All right, so back to you guys and your questions. Russell, how are you?
I'm doing good, doing good. Got a little bit of a weekend off. It'll be a smaller weekend in terms of visitors. Obviously, last week wasn't as overly big, and it seems like instead of having them all in during the weekend, that Ole Miss is bringing quite a few midweek visitors. Yesterday, which would be Tuesday, obviously we're recording this on Wednesday, Zion Logue from Lebanon, Tennessee visited. He doesn't have an offer yet, but he really enjoyed the visit, and sounds like Coach Harris is going to pull the trigger on the offer at least in the next couple months.
All right, let's get to some questions. Here they are, soft verbal questions. I was searching for them, and they weren't bolded in front of me, and so I was freaked out. That's because I'd opened the thread. All right. While you were talking, I was frantically searching, so hopefully this is not what you just said. The hold up on the commitment to the public with Sistrunk?
No, that was not what I said. Okay, no problem. So with Ashanti, he visited last weekend. It was his second visit in a month about, and he was really close to pulling the trigger, But he didn't have his family with him, and when he got back home and met with his family, kind of wanted him to, you know, kind of hold off and not make an early decision to where he, you know, might set himself up to possibly reopen his recruitment as things kind of progressed as the calendar went on. And now with Mississippi State coming in and probably offering this weekend when he visits there, it seems like that's going to be pretty much a Derek Hall situation as it was last year, or not last year, a couple months ago when Ole Miss had offered, and then Mississippi State offered, and then Hall really blew up. I don't see Ashanti really blowing up as much as Hall did, but it could happen in a smaller capacity.
Gun to your head, who's the quarterback in the 19 class?
As of right now, someone we talked quite a bit about actually on the with Nick Kruger, Grant Tisdale from Allen High School in Texas. Solid arm, solid talent. As Nick was saying, and I kind of agree with him, I think he's more of a pro style quarterback than people lead on to believe.
How many running backs in this class? Same gun to your head?
That's a lot of guns, man.
I know. There's a lot of Second Amendment discussion today and that kind of thing. And so
The running backs, I'm going to go with two. I don't know if you want to count Ely. Ely is probably going to sign with Ole Miss. He's currently committed. But with baseball taking off, I think he's having a really good year so far from what I've heard. And he might be rising up the draft boards even higher to the point where, you know, he might not play a down of football. I mean, it's been the topic of discussion since he committed. You know, as Chase has alluded to, as everybody's alluded to, he's a lottery ticket. And with that, you have to kind of have a backup plan, which is what Ole Miss has with Ramir Johnson, the running back from New Jersey, who will actually be on campus in the next couple of days.
You ever gotten a blister on the top of your mouth from like burning? You ate something too hot, and you get like a little blister, and then it pops?
I have not, thankfully.
It's like relief, yet at the same time, now the pain kicks in.
That sounds horrible.
I'm there. Pizza McRib, being the troll that he typically is, wants to know, given Steph Curry's injury and the players that are dealing with injuries, he says Golden State has never been more vulnerable heading into the playoffs. I agree. Outside of the Rockets and Warriors, who do you see as the biggest threat in the West? And do you think Markelle Fultz can make the Sixers even better for the playoffs?
I haven't seen Fultz play. Obviously, I know he made his basically season debut. He played early on in the season, but he really wasn't much of a factor and really kind of struggled in the beginning of the season. So for him to come back at this point of the year, kind of get seasoned as the playoffs get closer and, you know, Philly's fighting. They're trying to get up there above Cleveland. I think they're, what, a game back?
Yeah, they have a shot at the third seed. They have a real shot at the fourth seed. They're gonna host a game one playoff series probably,
which is crazy. And back in 2014, I actually kind of got into it with some Philly fans, and they went back recently and found my tweets. So I've been getting quote tweeted from 2014. I've been getting replies. It's been fun. But going back to the Warriors and the Rockets, I'm one of the people who really think if the Jazz can remain healthy, I think that they could push Golden State to a 6 or 7 game series if they get to the 8 seed. Obviously, you got Denver pushing. And
you know, it's funny. As a Thunder fan, I catch myself saying, if we can't be the 3, let's be the 7.
Yeah.
Let's just take them. No, Steph? See what happens.
Yeah, I mean, why not at this point?
And in the East, does it make Philly better? Yeah, Fultz makes Philly better. Here's what Philly is going to get out of this playoffs. I think they're going to get a first-round win. Then I think they're going to lose in the second round, and I think it's going to help them so much moving forward for next season. The Sixers next season are going to be one of the real sexy picks. They've got money to spend. These kids are getting better. This will be a little learning curve thing for them that is going to make them dangerous next year.
Did you see what Ben Simmons said about the Hawks last night when him and Karl Anthony Towns were playing Fortnite?
I did not.
They were playing Fortnite, and it was getting kind of late where Karl Anthony Towns was. And Ben was like, who are you guys playing tomorrow? And then he looked at the schedule. He's like, oh, you're playing the Hawks. You got plenty of time to play Fortnite. And they stayed up and played for quite some time. Obviously, you know, there's at this point of the season, you've got the teams who are clearly tanking, and you've got the teams who are, you know, fighting for playoff seeding. So, I mean, with teams like the Grizzlies, the Hawks, and teams like that, the Kings, they're trying to lose. And I don't remember who the Grizzlies were playing the other day, and they who were they playing? Was it the Nuggets when they beat them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, what are you doing?
No, they beat the Wolves.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it was, because Anthony Towns was pulling up for three. Yeah, the Timberwolves, I think they could seriously play themselves out of the playoffs right now.
Yeah, some of these teams are experiencing some playoff tension for the first time.
Yeah, and there's so much going on there in Minnesota with Wiggins. And
I'll answer the question. I like Portland. I really do. Now, they have an injury that popped up yesterday.
Who got hurt?
That crazy. I can't think of his freaking name after they just beat the Thunder the other night.
I know Harkless got hurt.
It's Mo Harkless.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know if he's going to miss extended time.
Well, no. I think they're just going to look at it. They're worried about it a little bit. But they have to be completely healthy. But if they are, with Lillard and McCollum and some of the people, they can score in a playoff series. Yes. To answer your question, yes, Golden State is very vulnerable. There are a lot of teams that if Steph's not on the floor, yes, there are a lot of teams – and it's going to shock you, when Steph's not on the floor, KD gets into iso ball. And when KD gets into iso ball, as good as KD is, they're not the Warriors. They're the Thunder again.
Yeah.
All right, expected visitors for this weekend for the spring game. No one's coming this weekend, right?
You've got Grant Tisdale actually coming this weekend. He'll be here Friday into Saturday.
Okay.
You've got Ramir Johnson coming in this weekend, the four-star running back from New Jersey. The 2020 wide receiver for North Carolina, who's got a handful of offers already, he was planning on coming to visit Ole Miss this week, but that just didn't work out, so he's not going to be able to make it. I expect Lafayette, cornerback, athlete, Brandon Turnage to be on campus in the next several days. Not really sure exactly which one, but he's on campus once a week, whether he gets reported or not. It's just so close, and he's there. This spring game, you've got the tight end currently committed to South Florida, Kamari Morales. You've got a four-star DB, Cortez Andrews, coming in. You've got Boonville athlete Dallas Gamble, who hasn't picked up his first offer yet, but still plans on coming to visit. He's hearing from some of the coaches, and that interest has really picked up. And I think you're going to see a lot more of the in-state kids pull the trigger on, you know, coming to the spring game kind of as it approaches, rather than, you know, having it planned with so many other junior days and everything going on, and Ole Miss having their spring game earlier than most in the area. That could benefit them in terms of visitors, but I'm really also not sure at the same point, you know, how important it is for these kids to visit for the spring game, especially if they've already seen a practice.
Yeah, I agree. You've stated that a big factor in several of the top prospects' recruitment isn't as much wins as losses as it is who they beat. In your opinion, which games are most important to win from a recruiting standpoint?
I mean, obviously, if you can win either one of the Alabama or Auburn games at home, but I mean, I don't really see that happening. I don't think that's possible. Really, the number one game I would have circled if I was an Ole Miss fan and I was hoping for, you know, that aspect of recruiting to be what you needed to be in order to get into the top 15, top 20 in this year's class, I would circle the LSU game. LSU has so many uncertainties going on. Orgeron and the offensive coordinator, who's really not going to be the offensive coordinator. Orgeron's going to be calling plays. And really with that, I mean, with wide receivers in state, like Donis Jackson and Kevin Barnett, a lot of other athletes as well, you know, N'Kobe Dean. There's a lot of fluctuation with recruits considering LSU. A lot of them were committed to LSU at one point. That's really kind of taken off. There's still one more who's currently committed, but I don't really expect that to last too much longer. Starkville linebacker Zach Edwards got himself into some pretty serious off-the-field problems the past couple weeks, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, whether or not LSU becomes aware of that and drops him or what. But going back to the question, the other game I would really have circled, which is kind of hard to do because it's the first game of the season, to have a must win, especially for Matt Luke in his first season as the full-time head coach. But if you lose that Texas Tech game, And Kingsbury's fighting for his job. He's fighting for his job to an endless degree. People thought he was going to lose his job last year. His name actually was mentioned as a candidate for the Ole Miss job. So, you know, with Kingsbury and the uncertainty with Texas Tech, you know, losing that game would be horrible, not just for recruiting purposes in state and around, but in the state of Texas especially. Because if you as an SEC West school are losing to that level of a program in the Big 12, I mean, there's going to be some problems. You agree with that?
Yeah.
With Texas Tech?
I think it's a really important game. I'm never going to be the guy that does the opener is the most important game of the year.
Oh, no,
thing.
No.
And I'm also never going to be the guy, as it pertains to recruiting, who says there's a certain number of wins you must attain to have a great class.
Yeah.
I do think it's an important season. I think it's a critically important recruiting season. I think beating Texas Tech gives them some breathing room for putting a good season together. I don't necessarily believe that a loss to Texas Tech, and I know you didn't just say this, but that a loss to Texas Tech is the end of the world.
Oh, no, it's not the end of the world, no.
It does dig a hole.
Yeah, especially.
And you'll have to figure out a way out of that hole.
Yeah.
Alabama's 2 weeks later, and my only problem with Ole Miss from a schedule standpoint, number one, I don't think this is going to be a very good defensive team. Okay, that's me. I hope I'm wrong for everybody's sake. It's easier to cover a good team than it is to cover a team that's struggling. So after the last few years, I wouldn't mind an easy season to cover. When your four SEC home games are all games that on paper you're going to be an underdog, that's tough. I don't think Ole Miss can beat Alabama at home. I don't think Ole Miss can beat Auburn at home. I think they will be challenged to beat South Carolina at home. And I think Mississippi State, on paper, is a better team than Ole Miss next year.
Yeah.
So, that's, like I said the other day, that's 1-3. Well, even if you beat Texas Tech and you beat Louisiana Monroe and you beat who else is just like Toledo or so, I don't know, whoever
that is. Kent State,
whatever. 4-0 in the non-league. It's 5-3. Okay, the problem you have then is that now you got to go to get to the 8-win mark that everybody talks about.
I don't see that as an.
You have to go 3-1 on the road in the SEC, and that's giving them Arkansas, which is winnable, but it's also losable. It's giving them Vanderbilt, which should be a win. But I've seen Ole Miss teams go to Vanderbilt and just get popped. And it's giving them a win at A&M, which I think is unlikely. And it's giving them a win at LSU, which I think is possible, but I don't want to put a lot of money on it. So that's my problem with accumulating wins. But the people that do the 8-win thing, frankly, they believe in that defense more than I do. And if they're right, hey, kudos. I'm not upset about it. I don't look at that defense and see a bunch of road wins. That's just me.
Understood, right. Yeah.
Last few minutes here. Will Sistrunk aid in the recruitment of Charles Moore?
Either way, whether he ends up at Ole Miss, Mississippi State, or anywhere else, I know they rode together for one of the trips they took to Ole Miss when Moore was there, and everybody kind of thought he was going to flip to Ole Miss, but that really didn't materialize. Moore's kind of since reaffirmed his commitment to Mississippi State. There were rumors about him going to LSU as well. Sistrunk actually grew up an LSU fan, which could be interesting. And I've kind of been like a little bit appalled. You know, I was in Ohio for so long where you don't even have to ask who a kid grew up a fan of. It was Ohio State. When I ask kids about that here, you get Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Alabama, LSU. You get a lot of LSU. Like the past 2 or 3 weeks, I've asked kids, and there's been a lot of LSU, whether it's from 2019, 2020, even the class of 2021, you know, going back to, I guess, the glory days of LSU. But yeah, like, to answer your question, I think he would aid in the recruitment of Charles Moore, whether it's to Mississippi State, to Ole Miss, or elsewhere.
Does Ole Miss have a real shot at either of the 5-star wideouts from Texas, Weiss or Henderson?
No.
Okay. Agreed. I don't even know, but I can tell you that I agree. we could do a lot longer on this than we really should or have time to do. How bizarre is it to you that Ole Miss fans are so into baseball, college baseball, he's referencing?
I kept track of a game thread for maybe 10 minutes yesterday during the game against Southern Miss, and I just completely lost track. Like, I would refresh it, and it would be like over 100. They'd be in like the fourth inning, and I'm like, what is going on there? And especially for a Tuesday night, I mean, I guess because there's no pro team around here and there's no minor league team nearby. Obviously, there's one in Jackson and one in Memphis, but don't get me started on Memphis today. But it's just crazy. It's just crazy to see that baseball is the number two, and it's really number one almost, at least to some people in the fan base right now, above spring football.
Yeah, we get a little inside baseball here. Pardon the pun. We get other rival sites say to us, "You cover the baseball games?" And we're like, "Yeah, man, we wouldn't be able to get away with not covering them." And they're like, "But why?" And you're like, "No, it's a big deal."
Yeah, 211 replies in a game thread.
Yeah, it's why I get a little salty when people do the, "Oh, you guys are just a recruiting site."
Mm-hmm.
If we're a recruiting site, how come we got all this baseball on the site?
Yeah, baseball dominates coverage quite a bit of the time.
All right, last couple of questions. Who are the best pass rushers in the state of Mississippi in 2019?
Jaron Handy from Perry Central, Diamante Russell from Provine, and Nathan Pickering from Seminary.
All right, what's the deal with, I think it's a basketball question, with Michael Barber, three-star forward?
That's a basketball question.
Yeah, I don't really know. I haven't heard he's from Flowood. I have not heard anything about him. Do you think Byron Young commits before the season, and do you think Ole Miss is in it to the end?
I think Ole Miss is in it to the end. I don't think he chooses Ole Miss. I also don't think he commits before the season. It seems like a lot of people kind of want to push the calendar up further and further. And when you push it up that far and you've got these kids making early decisions that you expect them to stick with, Ole Miss fans aren't going to like the results of that if that's what happens.
All right, last one. Here's one Naples wants to know. Guy you've seen – that isn't getting any love, but you personally think will blow up.
Ooh, that is a good one.
That's a good one.
That's
a new one.
Yeah, I like new questions. Class of 2019, I would actually have to go with the kid who's going to be visiting for the spring game, Boonville athlete Dallas Gamble. He plays quarterback there. They've got a much better quarterback behind him, but I guess for some reason they like having the athleticism at quarterback in Boonville, especially in that lower classification. That's an epidemic all over the state. Don't get me started on Lafayette putting Randy Anderson at quarterback. But with Gamble projects as a running back or a receiver at the next level. And if, Ole Miss does strike out on a few kids and that, they reach the conclusion that Ely is going to go to the majors, that's somebody they could see. I expect to see him at some camps, especially at Ole Miss this summer. And outside of the state of Mississippi, in Alabama, Braxton Ragland, who visited last weekend and got the offer, that was kind of a surprise to everybody, really, other than me. Ragland has really blown up since transferring from Leeds to St. Clair County. And St. Clair County is where, the signee Jalen Cunningham was from. And Cunningham really did probably play a little bit of a factor in, Ragland getting that offer. But with Ragland, he projects as a safety at the next level, and Ole Miss is going to need safeties next year. And so I do believe that offer is committable currently, and I do expect him to still camp in the summer.
Enjoy opening day. Good luck to your Braves. I know you'll be excited when Acuna comes up soon.
Oh, yeah, basically, yeah.
That's when your season starts. Should be fun. I think it's middle of April when he comes up.
Yep.
Braves return from a road trip in Chicago. They have a Monday home date. It's like April the 17th or so.
It's the day after the Rivals camp in Atlanta.
Ooh, you should stay. You might be able to go to the Acuna game. That's when he's going to make his debut. You heard it here first. Anyway, good luck to the Braves. We'll talk some baseball as the season goes on. In fact, we'll be back next week with another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Billy's Pecans. And we might even talk a little Major League Baseball next week, since the season will be rolling right along. So until then, our thanks again to Nick Kruger of Rivals.com. Our thanks to everybody at Billy's Pecans, to John Benelli, to the Storage Acquisition Group. Thanks to Russell Johnson. I'm Neil McCready. Talk to you next week. Take care.